this? Okay, another briefing book?
15 minutes, Chief. I think we should start by apologizing to our guests for keeping waiting for this length of time. And it's not the first time that it's happened. Last week, we had the same thing, we waited for an hour. So it's just really poor form for us to be so late. It's not so late, there's no explanation for it, and we keep these people waiting. That's come a long way.
Thank you, Honorable Breitenbach, and thank you for being ready today. Honorable Bongo, and we do indeed apologize for such a late. Honorable Bongo?
No, Chair. I want to cause the minute out of us. We sincerely apologize for starting in 2 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we proceed with the presentations from the Department of Justice? I'm not sure if we're going to put the two together, just to save time. Can we ask you, Advocate Peter Stewart, to proceed?
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I can just indicate who is here from the various departments so that the members have an idea. I'm Peter Dulong from the Department of Justice and Prosecutional Development. I'm also the chair of the Office of Criminal Justice System Review. Next to me, we have Godfrey Seva. He's the chair of the IGS board that deals with all the IT-related aspects, systems development, rationalization of elements, etc. Next to him is a lady from the Correctional Services, Malomo Ndlovu, that deals with human operations in particular, and in the DCS. Next to her is our colleague from the Office of the Chief Justice, Nai Ngumbe. That's right. I apologize for my pronunciation. And next to him is colleague Minister Baloy. Rose, back, we have some representatives. Brigadier Doug Smith from the Forensic Laboratories from South African Police Services. Mr. Billy Skoll from the Office of the Criminal Justice System Review. Bradley Smith from the National Prosecuting Authority. Brian Mayer from the Legal Aid South Africa. And, sorry, there's a representative. Lucky? Sorry. And then we've got other colleagues from DCS that joined us if there are any other questions. But these are the main roleplays. Chair, without much further ado, we will not have separate presentations in terms of different people, etc. What I'll do is I'll deal with most of the elements, and then the IJS elements I'll ask about for you to just deal with those in particular, and then we'll see how we proceed and take questions from you. Thank you very much for this opportunity. Basically, some background. Focus points, some governance aspects, the review work plan and approach, and then 7 priorities, and then some conclusions. We've given the presentation ahead of time, so I'm not going to go in detail. Cabinet approved the 7-point plan to be adopted and implemented in an integrated and holistic manner, and it's a journey from what was a fragmented, unfocused and focused criminal justice system to a future criminal justice system that is transformed, focused, coordinated and will manage at every level, and that address community needs. We're not there yet, but we are progressing well. Government's resolve was indicated to the public through various speeches and indications. If we look at the purpose and goal of the thing, it's basically to make sure that we have a modernized, effective criminal justice system that can render quality and professional services, swift, equitable and fair justice, address community justice, and deter crime on a sustainable basis. So the development plan strengthens the criminal justice system review and said that required pieces to be dealt with and to strengthen it. The integrated business plan is currently being dealt with, and just in terms of that, we were to change it at the end of December last year, but we've not managed to finalize that as yet because the cost is much bigger than initially thought of. What we need to do in terms of a business plan is to align the business across the various value chain elements, but also within the various departments, so that we look at alignment of resources, throughput, line budgets, and we have different model at the end of the day, the National Treasury can say, we have so many people, so many prosecutors, so many magistrates, so many legal aid, etc., and we work across the various elements. We are busy consulting various departments at the moment, and we hope by the end of this year we will have an insight. The Minister of Justice importantly indicated in his budget speech earlier this year that there are still challenges that need urgent attention to increase the public confidence in the criminal justice system. Part of this is to look at the outdated Criminal Procedure Act, reforming bylaws, looking at the use of restorative justice and overcrowding in correctional services. He has indicated since then that there will be a colloquium held by the department before the end of the financial year, March next year. That will deal with a range of issues, including aspects such as the separation of power, but also elements in terms of policy review, etc. At the moment, our minister has indicated he's going through the various provinces starting next week to look at what these elements that pose challenges at the court level and at local level between the various role players, etc., and that will infuse into this work that he's being dealt with. The 7-point plan, just to remind everybody quickly, firstly it's aligned with a single regional mission, leading to a single set of objectives, plans, priorities, and performance management targets for the CJS, and in that regard, 28 KPIs, that's a very big role. Secondly, to look at the coordinating and management structures from the top to the bottom in terms of the national and provincial structures, and that has been dealt with to some extent. Then some short and medium term practical proposals to improve what's happening in terms of performance at court. Look at the component parts in each of the criminal justice system departments, so that is from DCS side, police, etc., looking at the focus areas with serious shortcomings. Then 5 and 6 deals with your technology and modernization issues. And then lastly, to look at the population at large in ensuring that they assist with the fight against crime. The review is not something in isolation or in silo, it's part of the JCPS cluster work and it's also part of the National Development Plan within the MPSS. So what has been happening? Firstly, we've aligned with the outcomes of government in terms of the outputs of the various JCPS elements, reducing crime, more effective criminal justice system, and that's where the greatest focus is of the review, addressing corruption and the various other elements in terms of the outputs that are indicated on this slide. If we look at the linkages between the 7-point plan and these outputs, you can see that if we look at alignment, obviously the alignment number 2 with output 2 dealing with the effective criminal justice system is very much aligned, so does the court process, false information, etc. So this element basically gives an indication of how the various outputs and criminal justice system elements are aligned with each other. Chair, I'm not going to deal with too much detail in terms of the Office of Criminal Justice System, but we have all relevant role players there. The latest one that is being added is the Office of the Chief Justice, so that we have a full value chain, right from the police, the MBA, DCS, legal aid, Department of Health, all the other elements that are required as a treatment plan. The one that is going to come to the future full at this point in time and is still excluded is the Department of Home Affairs. They are a new member of the JCPS cluster, and their involvement is crucial if we look at ACES and the fingerprinting elements, etc., to bring them into the fold and make sure that we deal with their aspects as well. In terms of the strategic approach, we make sure that the interventions are aligned and coordinated between the various role-playing departments. We're looking at processes and systems. Interventions are signed off at the highest level from different offices in terms of protocols and other elements, and obviously it's part of the medium-term strategic and economic frameworks. What we're presently busy doing, as I've indicated, is one of the models to look at the calculating of the balance elements throughout the system, so that we know that we have enough prosecutors, enough legal aid representatives, detectives, etc., and that is part of the business plan element. If you look at the various elements, I'm not going to go too much detail in terms of the first one. The most important one that I think we indicate there is that we've developed a single vision and mission from cluster side, and indicated that it's further buy-in needed. Now, what do we mean by that? We mean that a lot of changes have taken place in terms of persons that's new to the system, etc., and that haven't had the exposure of the past. And it's to make sure that those people know what the review is about, know what the alignments of companies all about it, to make sure that we have buy-in and that the highest level of access of that. In terms of strategic elements, it's obviously the integration of the data across the whole value chain, and we deal with that later when we deal with the modernization elements. In terms of the operational interventions, we've dealt with more than 20 high-level protocols that give guidelines to the various departments in terms of what needs to happen in terms of which areas. So, for example, when you deal with things such as mental disability elements in detail, how do we deal with that in terms of the other value chain partners, prosecutors, legal aid, etc. So on. In addition to that, we've got several interventions at the front end that deal with forensic capabilities of crime scene and forensic laboratories, etc., and I'll deal with that a little bit later again. Change 2 basically deals with the management and coordination of the CJS, and I think very important in terms of this is the Office of the Chief Justice that has now basically taken over case flow management in terms of what's happening at a court level, in terms of scheduling of cases, in terms of dealing with postponements, making sure that trial ready cases are fast tracked, etc. Now, in terms of this, we find that the Chief Justice have instituted a national efficiency enhancement committee at the national level, but also on a provincial level, led by the judge presidents, the provincial efficiency enhancement committee. And this is a very important development because these committees now comprises of all relevant bodies at that provincial level, whether it's public works, or justice, or prosecutors, or legal aid, or correctional services, are all down there, and they can deal with the blockages of the patients. In terms of the JCPS, we have an implementation forum of these that meet on a monthly basis, a national development committee, as well as the IJS board and other components that help align the various activities. Provincial level, we've got the provincial development and joint committees that help deal with some of these issues. And then DCS has a devolved detention branch, which in 2008 was started through the review was just an idea. It's now in place, functioning, and we are monitoring the work thereof. In terms of interventions on a practical level, obviously an important element is the judicial standards and norms that have been developed by the Chief Justice and gazetted, and I'll talk to that a little bit later again. I think the aim is that the court needs to focus on trials and that other proceedings like bail and administrative elements be dealt with in generalization and trial court if possible. We've had a positive clearance ratio, so more cases are being dealt with than are coming in on an annual basis. So that doesn't mean that we have less backlogs. In actual fact, although we've had a decline in backlogs for the last couple of years, the past financial year, in the first quarter, we've seen an increase specifically at the regional court level. The reason for that is that the high courts are pushing down some of the cases that they normally dealt with. But secondly, more important, the cases in the regional courts are becoming more complex and they're taking more time, etc. So it just takes longer to deal with some of that. But there's also other scheduling aspects, etc., that needs to be dealt with. So one of the blockage areas at the moment is at a regional court level. Speedy availability of condition reports, etc., we'll deal with that when we deal with such aspects, but that has improved dramatically. And then obviously the number of sentences of 10 years and longer have increased, and I'll show some statistics a little bit later in terms of that. And that is a worrying factor because we have more people in our jails for a longer period of time. So unless we deal with rehabilitation and other elements in more focused manner, our jails and the overcrowding thereof are going to remain an issue. We've done from our part a lot to make sure that the remand detainees decrease, and that has been working wonderfully. And I'll show some statistics in terms of that. That has been coming down nicely, but the sentencing elements have now pushed up it from the other side. In terms of the backlog reduction project, we've got 52 extra courts at the moment that are giving extra capacity, and these courts in the regional court as well as in the district court have managed to keep our courts stable, the courtroom stable. In general, we've managed to meet the targets until the end of the financial year last year, but as I've indicated from this year, there's been an increase in terms of the regional courtrooms in particular. Interventions, we've dealt with protocols as I've indicated, that has led to improved court efficiency in relation to the focus areas that are covered by those protocols. I'm just going to mention some of these. One of it is 63A bail protocol, and this is where there is overcrowding in a very specific correctional center, that the proportions of that is receiving, is in such proportions that they are material and imminent threat to human dignity. Bring the head of that facility and bring those people to the court, and the court can then make a decision. And I think some statistics there for February and March, especially for example, 2,400 applications were submitted and 40% were successful. So obviously you can see that the court are trying to assist there where there are real stresses in terms of some of these facilities. In terms of the incarceration of remand detainees, Section 49G of the Correctional Services Act, there's been a reduction of 30.7% in terms of the people that have been dealt with in Bafigard, and that is good news as well. One of the challenges is that we don't have a proper feedback loop from the courts to DCS and in the system as such, and that's something that we are giving attention as part of the protocol. We've also developed a protocol on referral of terminally ill and severely incapacitated remand detainees. And in this regard, there has been some applications, etc. These are obviously very high-level applications where there are real terminally ill and severely incapacitated remand detainees. So that protocol is working well. The procedure when DCS generally releases remand detainees to SAS for further investigations and to ensure early arrival in court was developed, must have a practical application at court level. In the past, we've had many complaints from correctional services that there's not enough control over these type of things, and in this regard, we're now finding that the remand detainees are dealt with in a much more aligned manner, and that it's all the complaints that previously were made have now basically come to an end. Access to remand detainees for consultation by legal aid, that has provided clarity for the DCS officials of the services, and that's working well in practice. There's a whole range of other protocols. I'm not going to go into detail with any of them because the patient, as I think, that was circulated beforehand. The one that might be of some interest is the protocol on audiovisual remand systems. That is something that works well with audiovisual remand systems that were developed, etc., and that is in place in various courts. This is now being rolled out in 2015. We've had approval from the NEC, from the also the Chief Justice side, and so that comment has been received from the judiciary, and that has been rolled out as something intended. The Forensic Mentoring Act was a very important act that was developed initially from the Office of the Criminal Justice System Review side, and it was being promoted with Parliament, etc., and so on. It's now an act, it's working in practice, etc., and basically to help deal with that, to build a memorandum for understanding further protocols between the various departments, etc., just to make sure that this act works properly. And I must say, Chair, that this is really in practice assisting the various operators to help deal with these aspects in a proper way. If you look at remand detainees, then we see that basically from 2012 to 2015, we've had a substantial change. The 21st of July, the remand detainee number stood at 40,137. During, I think, the first part of August, for the first time, I think in about 15 years or more, we were below the 40,000 mark, with 39,000 something. And I think that just shows that there's a continued focus on making sure that there are less and less in the system. And I think that is absolutely wonderful because we see it right through various departments. It's not just justice, it's not just DCS, it's everybody working together to try and reduce this. One of the ways in which we are doing this is to make sure that from legal aid side, and from DCS side, we look at the profiles of these matters in conjunction with prosecuting authorities to then prioritize these matters where we can. We now have a web-based tool where we can, on a monthly basis, see other blockages. We've got the profiles of the 20 longest serving remand detainees in the country, per province, nationally, etc. And we've got profiles of each of those people to see what's happening in terms of them. And that information is then circulated monthly, not only to the departments, but also to each judge resident that heads the provincial EEC, the Provincial Efficient Enhancement Committees, as well as the legal aid, the prosecuting authority, all river brokers that we can think of. We circulate that information. So these are the cases that we need to focus on, and that has managed to start making a movement on those that have been there for very long. In terms of the specific interventions in the various provinces, we can see that there's been an overall reduction of about 9% in terms of these elements from 2012 to 2015 in terms of some of these cases that have been there for quite a considerable time. If we look at the long periods of detention of the various role players, as at the 18th of May, 1,701, and you can see that the focus areas, that the ones that we are really specifically focused on, is all those that are there longer than 5 years, 4 to 5 years, 3 to 4 years, and then obviously the 2 to 3 years, which is the biggest category. But these are the cases that have been there for a long period of time. And I must say that most of these are in the regional courts. That's where the more serious are. So these are not petty cases. These are really serious cases. These are the rapes, the robberies, the really serious matters that are in high courts and in the regional courts. If we look at children, we've absolutely tried to make sure that children is only kept in prison as a last resort. And in this regard, a snapshot of 30 June showed that there were only 108 remanded children countrywide in all DCS facilities. That number has gone down to, I think, 98 in July. I think there's been a slight increase again in August to about 101. But that I think is also good. A couple of years ago, we had more than 300, between 300 and 400 of these children on a basis in prisons for a long period of time. And now we see that they are here for a very short period of time and they are less than about 100 at the most. If we look at some of the other interventions that has helped from police side, we've established in 118 courts in all the various provinces detective court case officers. Now these are officers that help deal with communication between prosecutors and the detectives, making sure that the case dockets are dealt with properly, that inquiries are being monitored and dealt with, and liaises basically between the detective units and the prosecuting authority. They are starting to work. We want more of them. But obviously, there are some budget constraints on the producer side, and that is something that we'll keep on pushing as one of the focus areas because we've seen that in practice these things are working. Legal aid has been one of the success stories in the family of justice instances, but improved their coverage to regional in the regional courts to 99%. District courts about 88%, they're monitoring all children that are in custody for longer than a month, and they individually track these cases of the children at their justice centers. They also monitor very specific services as well the websites do, with all remand detainees more than 2 years in custody. We are starting to see, in terms of this tool, how many are there that are partly heard, how many are there for postponements, what are the reasons for postponements, all those sort of things which help us track the monitoring of these type of cases. In terms of postponement parts, obviously forensic service is one of the big elements that we do a lot of work, investigation of police, etc., prosecutors, legal representation, and then the management of remand detention. In terms of critical elements where more work is required, I think we've dealt with forensic services, and there's more case of maintaining and making sure that the things that have been put in place continue to be dealt with. But I think our big challenge at this point in time is in terms of the investigating side, the detectives. We don't have sufficient numbers. We've actually seen in the past 2 years a huge decline in the numbers in terms of agencies, etc., in terms of skills and those sort of things. So there is a challenge in terms of that. Conjunction with the police, they are giving attention to that, but I think we need to look at any of the component parts. The investigating services, I think, is one of the elements that needs more focused attention. In terms of the specific interventions that we are dealing with at the moment, is the various legislative aspects, specifically on the ECS side, that have been put in place. I'm not going to go into too much detail there. but that it's quite clear that as a result of the establishment of the remote detention block in DCH, they are now constantly remote detainees much more closely. We have more information that are readily available. And I think we've also seen that in terms of the remote detainees, the bail aspects, etc., about 15% has been given bail that are sitting there simply because they are too poor. And that's an element that's what we need to look at. How do we deal with that through either other conditions or bail, etc., or other ways to make sure that people don't just sit in jail because they're too poor and they can't exercise the right that has been given to them. We've worked specifically on changing the J7 models of detention to improve classification of remote detainees and make sure that we can analyze what's happening in terms of those elements. Chair, in terms of the IDA system, we had for quite a while a lot of work that was done behind the scenes in order to make sure that systems were developed in the various departments as building blocks for dealing with that. Part of the IJS board's work was to deal with the prioritization of these matters, and then particularly looking at the five priorities that the cluster approved to ensure that we deal with those priorities in a certain manner. In terms of that, I think we've got trade integration, integration and business intelligence. And I think to deal with these various elements, I'm going to ask my colleague, Mr. Godfrey Sebel, to basically just deal with those elements. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kikwans. Madam Chair and honorable members and colleagues, I'm going to be very brief. I'll start on slide number 7 when I'm outlining the five key priorities that I'm looking at. These are the five priorities that we approved by the Deputy of Cluster and also through the Cabinet Memorandum sent to Cabinet for approval, and those are the five aspects that were approved by the Cabinet. If you look at on the left hand side, on the right hand side of the slide, it tells you how we have grouped those five key integration variables into various packages, ranging from the testing integration, case integration, as well as the The next slide gives you an indication of how, from a basic architecture perspective, we are doing the integration. It also gives you an indication of which departments are participating in the program, and indicates how we are moving the information across. If you look at the middle block, it talks about LJS from the left half, which is more of an orchestration layer that allows information to move from one department to the other. The central infrastructure that we have put in place to facilitate the movement of information from one department to the other. In the middle of this department, we have put what we call the integration endpoint, which is more of a translator of information from various systems in this department, so that is understood by the transversal hub, so that a common language can be used to translate the transport of public information throughout the terminal justice venture. So this also gives you a bit of progress in terms of the department that are ready to be able to transmit information and receive information throughout the building. You can see that the department has received services at the beginning of the building, and the integration endpoint ready. So prosecuting authority, the integration endpoint is also ready. So justice. Office of the Chief Justice is still a new key on the block, so we're still in the process of identifying. As part of the migration process, what would be expected from them, and what would go from them eventually, particularly when we're talking about the workforce. Department of Social Development in progress, Correctional Services is also in progress of establishing integration endpoints, not there yet. In that age, Roma players already have their integration endpoint ready, therefore the information can move from back and forth from that department to other departments. Just to provide a bit of achievements, highlights of achievements so far, upon the review of the Okay, as you spoke by yourself a few years ago, you have managed to get some progress going on the program again. If you look at the integration between tests and access to the case administrative system in the police, as well as the integrated case management system in the Department of Justice, where we are moving certain docket information from the police to the court, and based on all other system to about 1,153 sites, and then police stations as well as military police stations and district centers alike. So this just leads to about 492 of the course that we have done. In terms of legal aid, we have enabled the legal electronic notification for legal aid justice center coming from the police head system. This will enable me to about 848 applications associated with justice centers. The further integration that we have done is an extension of the initial integration between the justice and the police. This now includes what we call the electronic management system in the NCA. This is the solution that enables the electronic charge sheet or electronic J15 website, and also includes case outcome integrations. This solution has now been deployed fully in two courts, which is Boulogne and Davidson. Initially, when we did the deployment of the solution, we distributed the software to our 22 courts by the end of the 31st of March 2015. However, we picked up a number of challenges in operation in Davidson and Boulogne. So the latest release of the software that fixes a number of challenges we had encountered was released in the previous week. And we are currently going through the post implementation support and further switching on the system effort when the users on the ground are ready to use the current system. The next slide talks to the new system that we are developing in year 8, which is called electronic legal aid application. It basically replaces the legal system that the legal aid was utilizing. The solution is currently in user testing. It is planned for commencement of the production rollout in the third quarter going forward. In terms of Department of Correctional Services, the new solution that is called Integrated Inmate Management System, which was piloted at Johannesburg Correctional Center. That pilot was concluded by the 31st of March. At the moment, there is a procurement process, same process for the HR enhancement to resolution as well as the rollout, which we hope that it will start in the current financial year. Having a social development, but we're also preparing to integrate research to do with this basic competitive law. And this also includes social aspects of victim empowerment and the assignment of probation officers and the electronic manner and so on and so on. In terms of the testing integration that we've done so far, we have managed to develop a solution called PIVA 1. We enable instant verification of certain IDs for home affairs. And the solution was piloted in about two sites, that is Mamelodi and Kandia police stations, and it's now ready for deployment. We are currently trying to integrate that solution in areas where it is needed within the cluster. We are currently just embedding the solution into the current various processes. Another achievement is
the development of the different architectural frameworks and designs, which have been drafted to pave the way forward for the creation of a unique different identifier, interconnected routine and interaction with the different tracking, which we work in progress as far as the integration is concerned. We are currently working on what the second version of personal identification of education application, which enables criminal record checks in an instant manner, latent searches, granted test returns using all 10 digital fingerprints. And this solution requires a full upgrade of the harness system in home affairs. We are currently working with CSIR, police, home affairs, as well as PITA to define the solution. And we're hoping that in January, February, this, the specification to be completed for the echoes of September. This solution will also help us to eventually be able to provide the clearance certificates from the National Register of Sex Offenders. The integrated booking stream is also a work in progress, and this is a big chunk of work that needs to happen within the police. It basically requires a re-engineering of the booking process within the police to integrate digital capture booths, the introduction of the iris and facial recognition technologies, large scans of fingerprints, which will all be associated in order to create what we call a single person object or identifier. Part of this work will also be the realignment of existing such test-related systems, which are currently fragmented to a large extent. So this will also lead us to be able to do a tracking of technology of the criminal justice system, into what we call the electronic audio receiving process, so we can digitally dispatch persons from one person facility to the other throughout the criminal justice system. In other words, when somebody has to move from the police cells to the court, we will electronically be using biometric devices, the person out of the system, and by the time the person arrives at court or another person facility, the full profile of that person will have been sent, and then the person is being received on the other side. It will just be a verification of information already provided. In case of the profile of the person, whether the person is a little violent, the digital photograph of the person, all cases that are related to the person, so on and so on. Another solution which we are very happy to report is our business intelligence solution, which is also a geographic information system, which we have now deployed to a virtual environment. This is a state-of-the-art performance dashboard, which we use to measure the performance of the criminal justice system. In the previous financial year, we had committed to providing 9 of the 28 key performance indicators by the end of the financial year. And by the end of the financial year, we had deployed 14 of the 28 key performance indicators, which are the headline measures that we use to measure the criminal justice system as a value chain. So this is one solution that we feel that is quite a game changer, and we had to do a demonstration to members of the house and their colleagues. So this is one solution that we would like to see. We're also preparing for the process of getting to the pool of 14 key performance indicators. We're preparing data from the Department of Correctional Services as well as Department of Social Development in order to populate further key performance indicators that have not been developed yet on the dashboard. I'm going to go very quickly through the rest of the slides. In terms of specific What's the kind of major aspects? As I've indicated, the integrated community management system is well in progress. There's also a number of technology infrastructure activities that are taking place in the correctional services. Part of them is to support the IMS system. There's also some level of infrastructure enhancements, such as video conferencing, that is underway. This one will try the best way for surveillance, access control, and personal control. And yeah, I think I'll pause here.
Thank you, Mr. Rousseau. I think just one other element that is currently underway in these years is to look at how do we get victims in parole boards more involved. And a new audiovisual system has been installed in all parole boards so that we can have increased participation of victims. And I think that's an important element for the future, once that's put in place in operation. If we look at the last change in terms of 7-point plans, the community safety forum, community policing forums, in this regard, the community safety forum is one of those elements that has been mixed successes. It's served by the civilian secretariat of police. We find that it's very much linked to municipalities and funding, etc. In 8 provinces, we've had a number of community safety forums established. Unfortunately, in the 3 states, we've had challenges where there's been budgeting issues and other challenges. So the 3 states don't have any community safety forums. Community policing forums, there's 1,132 countrywide. We've established 2 working papers at this point in time, a white paper on policing and a white paper on safety and security. And those 2 white papers will give us more frameworks and regulatory aspects to deal with the partnership with communities. Those are out for comment at the moment, and once that has come in, we will look at further refinements in conjunction with civilian secretary to deal with that. I'm not going to deal too much detail with other correctional aspects like established community corrections and the sort of the justice elements, which is very important, because it helps deal with victim offender mediation and other elements, and it helps deal with engagement with the public. We also obviously have things such as halfway houses that have been established by DCS and a range of other activities that help use with this engagement with the community and with rehabilitation elements. In conclusion, I think we can see that this is work in progress. There's been substantial progress in the past 2 years in terms of the various elements that are coming together, specifically on the IJS elements. There's been extremely good progress in terms of that. If you look at the 7-point plans, obviously the main aim is improving legitimacy and public confidence. That's not been fully achieved, but that's obviously work in progress. Weaknesses and blockages, that's been addressed in part. Efficiency, been addressed in part. Supervision, that's been completed. And strategies, the outcomes and the balanced input of the component parts is being addressed. And obviously the performance monitoring with the dashboard and things that have been dealt with. It's not fully addressed, but it's very good work in progress. I basically want to just step over here and just deal with some elements in terms of the Office of the Chief Justice and in terms of the work that is being done by some of the other component parts, just in terms of high impact. The Office of the Chief Justice elements, basically, if you look at, and I think their presentation was circulated, so I'm just going to deal with some of the elements relating to that. Obviously, the Chief Justice is now the head of the judiciary, and they need to look at the establishment and monitoring of norms and standards for the judicial functions of all courts. And I think that's very important. Previously, we didn't have those norms and standards, and it's crucial that we have that so that there's uniformity across the various elements. The gazetting all those standards basically gave us case for management elements from national to provincial level, and obviously it also helps deal with the monitoring of cases. in terms of the national level, we see that the Justice President and the Chief Justice is very much involved with the strategy, policy, monitoring, and evaluation elements, while at the local and provincial level, we get more tactical and operational. What's very important is that at the provincial level, we now have provincial service centers. These are new things that have been established by provincial heads on a director level who oversees and monitors the high court elements in terms of the running of the court. And this deals with both from a court management as well as a registrar element to ensure that there is effective administration support to the judiciary in terms of the achievement of criminal justice as priorities. Elements that are very important is that there are standing items in terms of the National Efficiency Enhancement Committees, there's training initiatives, ABR, audiovisual remand system monitoring, a case for management, demand detainees in prison for longer than 2 years, and even monitoring of statistics of the various court performance elements. Now I think that's crucial that if you have that back from the top, from Chief Justice, Judge President, etc., then in future we will get some traction out of that. There's more engagement with the role players and the prosecuting authority, all the other elements that are involved in the system, and that is healthy. Very important, there's also standards set specific dates and times. They have to plead within 3 months of the first court appearance. They must try and strive to finalize criminal matters within 6 months, and that they should not reserve judgment without a fixed date for handing down judgment, and judgment should be handed down within 3 months of the court. So those are very specific standards, etc., which haven't been there previously, and the monitoring of these is starting to be structured. I've indicated that training is a big element. One big thing that has started to happen is that the various Dutch presidents, including the chairperson of the Magistrates Commission, has involved in identifying judicial officers to help deal with the training of detectives. We indicated there's a need to deal with the training of detectives, etc. So we're starting to get elements in terms of how do we train detectives, proper statements, dealing with other elements, etc. Mm-hmm. So prosecutors and those elements and the judiciary starting to assist in dealing with some of those elements. Obviously, I think what's crucial is that the judiciary also conduct visits to the correctional centers, basis of detention to inform themselves of condition, and that's starting to happen. And obviously, even our challenges that's brought to the attention of the relevant role players. There has been, in conjunction with like we have the IJS board from the department and from the JDPS side, the heads of court established a judicial and administrative information technology strategy steering committee, JT. And they deal with, from a high court and from the judicial side, the information and communication technology development. So as they have been and IJS board, there will be closer interaction between them for future to make sure that the elements that are developed for the Office of the Chief Justice is linked with what we have in terms of IJS professionalization system. Just in terms of forensics deals with a whole range of things, from crime scene optimization, criminal reporting, the forensic laboratories, IT and main resource elements. Just to indicate, when we started in 2008 and 2009, backlogs in terms of the forensic laboratories of police stood at 59,023. They are now down to 7,506. You can see the absolute change in terms of the backlogs. It's been absolutely good work that's been rendered in there from the front end side. If you look at dealing with previous conviction reports, they can now be generated within 15 days.
Sorry,
we will circulate the dog. This is a high level of aspect. We'll give this to you. In terms of this, it's just an indication of, in terms of the previous conviction rate for 15 days, it's now generated within 15 days, and we are seeing that the target is 94%, and at the moment we are reaching 98% of the previous conviction that can be generated within 15 calendar days on average. In terms of the forensic services, their staff levels, they grew from 6,098 in 2010 to more than 7,489 in 2015. I'm just going to deal with the National Department of Health. I think obviously we realize there's a lot of backlog still there, the specific blood alcohol analysis cutoffs are currently decreasing. The post-mortem ones have decreased to 6,918 in 2015 February, and then in July it dropped down to 3,964. The pre-mortem, which is the current ones, the unprocessed drunk driving blood alcohol samples, in February we had 54,129. That's dropped down to July 59,433. And toxicology backlogs 5,692. So in general, you can see that there is a continuous drop in terms of the backlogs also at the Department of Health. The staffing, just to show that it's increased from 2009, the Pretoria Laboratory at 29, 2015 that's increased to 54, Johannesburg from 35 to 63, Cape Town 36 to 49, and from the 5th of April we have a new laboratory in KwaZulu-Natal that will deal with the analysis of that side for 21 persons. So we've seen a dramatic increase in terms of staffing there as well. DCS, just some indications, the ward attention from 2010 dropped from 47,000 to 41,000 over the 3 years. And then in terms of sentence groups, so this is a slide that I just wanted to indicate. I indicated that we've seen that we're getting more people that are serving longer sentences. If we look on average here, in 2010 we had basically 54,000 that then had 10 years and longer. At the moment, that's now 58,172. And you can see that the numbers of people from 10 to 15 years increased to 21,000, 15 and, to 20 years, 13,000, 20 years, 9,900, which was criminals, 241, and in life sentences, 13,455. And this is having an impact in terms of the correctional services. Longer people there, so we need to put in more aspects related to the rehabilitation. Just some elements, basically, we've improved the crime scene, fingerprinting and forensic services. Criminal history information is now readily available. We've reduced the court backlogs in many areas. More drug and alcohol science, blood alcohol backlogs significantly dealt with, and the remand detain is dealt with. What we still need to do is to have proper sound business diligence, that I think is a work in progress from the KPI project level. Cross-cutting component parts is required, and that's what we are busy with. We map out the sourcing and costing needs across the value chain. And then obviously I think the business plan will put together all these efforts. Madam Chair, I think what we need to indicate in concluding is that a lot of money has gone into this. This is not a couple of hundred thousand, it's several billion there. But this money has not gone into the whole value chain. The big areas have been the front end, the forensics, where a lot of money has been counting, and in terms of the IJS systems, development, etc. Those are not cheap, those are really expensive elements. The rest of the elements that we've been dealt with is through normal baseline budgets of departments, etc., with some additional funding. So we're trying to survive this without the cost additional to the various things. We're trying to deal with it through improving systems, through improving the various elements in the system without asking for a lot of extra money. The money that is required to deal with the big items like the IT, etc., or costly, etc., that we can monitor and deal with. If we've done an audit through the Auditor General in terms of this, that the first audit was included, I think, the end of last financial year, with a couple of issues that were raised and that was dealt with, basically no major issues, and planning now for next audit in the next financial year. So we've seen that we're dealing with this in a proper way, not just on an asset type of thing, but also through ensuring that there's proper audit. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to Advocate Peter Durant. I'm going to open for questions and comments from the members. I recognize Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Tapo, Honorable Pumlana, Honorable Self, Honorable Chi. In that order.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Probably what I'm going to be asking is going to sound like criticism. However, probably nobody here understands better than I do what the difficulties are. with the system, so assuming that life. I understand that it's not an overnight solution. It's not necessarily met as criticism, but sure, where does one begin? You're talking about a 7-year plan that was first discussed in 2008, it's not 2015, it's 17 years. And frankly, there doesn't appear to be a huge amount of progress made for such a lengthy period of time. So, the first question I have for you is, you have all these committees and steering committees and boards and acronyms, and who, if anybody is manning these steering committees, boards, etc., etc., is there anyone left to do the actual work? Because all I see in the presentation are boards and steering committees and people involved in planning and processes, and who's actually doing work? You mentioned that several of the CJR 7.10 interventions have been implemented with good results. Could you just specify which ones precisely, briefly, and with the results that are good? And then you mentioned several times throughout your presentation that you're working to increase public confidence in the criminal justice system. I'm sure that you're aware, and it shouldn't be for me to tell you because I'm quite sure you know it, that the public in fact has no confidence in the criminal justice system. In my experience, the public really believes that they have been abandoned and left to the world, and there is no confidence in the criminal justice system. And recent developments in the criminal justice system has not helped to improve their confidence. In fact, every time things look like they may improve, they in fact just go down the drain at an exponential rate. You say that our output to is a more effective criminal justice system. Well, frankly, your output to is just not working. The criminal justice system is not effective. And all the figures that you put together look impressive, but in my own experience and my experience from interaction with ordinary people is that the criminal justice system is not functioning. You mentioned the initiative of the Office of the Chief Justice, and I think that is a positive development. However, it shouldn't even be necessary. It shouldn't really be the job of the judges to sort out the problems of the criminal justice system. The fact that they're assisting with this and making a difference is wonderful, and they will be grateful, I'm sure. But it's really not their problem. The judges are there to adjudicate, and fixing the criminal justice system really just shouldn't be their issue at all. The fact that they're doing it just shows how poorly the criminal justice system is in fact performing. Then you mentioned the statistic of children in incarcerated in prison. I see that only 108. Well, yes, still only 108, and 108 too many. Incarceration is not the place for children. And why is it that we can't do better? Why are we keeping it in prison? There must be a different place. There must be a better place. And in 2015, and 21 years into a constitutional democracy, I find it difficult to believe that we can't do better. Similarly with mentally ill patients, I'm given to understand, and I had a long conversation with somebody in Kimberley yesterday, about mentally ill patients who have been kept in prison. But why is it happening? It's not acceptable. These people are mentally ill, they should not be in prison. There must be a better place for them. And it's not good saying that tool we don't have, it's not acceptable to keep them there. And I know that I'm preaching to converted, and again, it's not meant as criticism to you, but generally speaking, the criminal justice system has got to be able to do better. Why are we keeping mentally ill patients in jail? It's unconstitutional, it's inhumane, and it's not acceptable, and there should not be one. I'm given to understand that in Kimberley, all mentally ill patients are kept in prison. The West End facility can take 7 or 8 people, and the rest are in prison, and they have been there for 10 years. They serve the sentence in prison. Mentally ill people are not acceptable. Can't be done. talk about improving the technology in the prison, what is being done about the electronic checking system? How far is that? And why hasn't it been implemented? Then you mentioned that the electronic cash management system has been rolled out. Can you tell me exactly where? Which courts? How many dockets have been loaded successfully? And how many cases have been prosecuted from beginning to end using the electronic case management system successfully? I have serious misgivings about the electronic case management system. You need capable people from the beginning to end to deal with it. I'm not quite convinced that we have that yet. In fact, I'm not all convinced that we have it. And I'm sure that I don't need to point out to you what the difficulties and the dangers are if a system is mismanaged even slightly. And then you mentioned something just towards the end that it's rather astonishing, that judges are training policemen in the art of taking affidavits. Are they sitting judges? Are they retired judges? Where does one find them? Where do they do the training? Judges are looking for more important things than teaching policemen how to take affidavits. And isn't that the police's job? I understand that the prosecutor has to do this, I mean, he's all done for years. Nobody likes it, it's not acceptable, shouldn't be doing it. But judges? And I have hundreds more questions, but perhaps somebody else should have a chance. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Counselor. Let me start by thanking the presenter. Chair Counselor, may I start with the issue of MEEC, National Efficiency Committee, which is led by Office of Chief Justice. Then, may I be clarified on National Observation Committee, its mandate, and then composition, and the function thereof. But this one is clearly stated, what the functions are. And again, Sheraton, the issue of electronic transmission of our docket, as mentioned, can I have an update and any challenges encountered there in this regard? And the application of our restorative justice, the approach by GCS in terms of victim offender vision and victim offender dialogue. I forgot the slide number. That is the policy. Yes. And again, the in terms of application of Children Justice Act, whereby children are taken to correctional facilities at the last resort. May you also elaborate more on this? When you were presenting, initially you mentioned that initially it was 108, now it has reduced. So, are there no alternative places like places of safety? In the case I know in Limpopo, where these children are mostly placed, yes. Why they now taking them to correctional facilities. And I guess the departmental integration progress, maybe I'm a slow learner, but you can elaborate more on this if it won't take much of your time. It's not page numbers. This issue of implementation of protocols. How often do heads of correctional facilities make use of these protocols to address issue of, most importantly, issue of overcrowding? Because last time when we, as a committee, portfolio committee, we went to Madaje Correctional Center, it was so overcrowded. So I would like to know, how often do you make this office protocol, especially CC3 capital A? Thank you, Chesna.
Honorable Bumbani.
Well, I think the Bradenbach has actually finished everything.
Okay, I will
tell us. I don't think that, I think there's a lot of good things that has the positive stuff in here. There's a lot of progress and I appreciate it. I just wanted to check on a few things really. I'm sure you would agree that if 157 people are staying in detention for more than 5 years, it's more than detention without process of law. I think it has to be done there. And I'm not sure if it won't lead to litigation at some stage. Surely somebody has to answer. You can't stay for more than 5 years in prison without being determined whether it's still so. And there needs to be some improvement in that. I just wanted to understand, do you mean that, you see, I was born before technology, so I may not know. Do you mean that there is a central place where each department has access to the information that it is there? And is able to access it from that point of view. If so, what provisions do we have if for safety of that information? I've never been to Nigeria. I mean, how do you know if there are no hackers that would get? How do you protect it against hackers? And what is the what do you call them, computer crashing, right? What provision do you have against such things? I also have some good news, which I'm not sure if they are very true, that this video system has been installed in all telephones. Is that a fact? Or is it a way of icing the cake to the telephone? I will personally go check this. The other one is the languages. I have a problem in the statements going to court taken by people in a foreign language, in English. By people who don't even understand that. Are you using the African languages and taking the statements, or are you using English? And if you are, who is interpreting that and is there any qualified interpreter to go and say what is being said? And how does this come into this integration? There are problems in there because I know that lots of people have been found guilty because of what has been said by the other people, by the policeman. The policeman doesn't understand English. The policeman doesn't know what has been said, but he just takes the statement and in heart he thinks the person is saying. The person goes to prison, some are sent to life in prison, having done nothing because of that. And how far is the justice? How far is what do you do as far as that is concerned? Because I've always said that if you are charged in a foreign language and you're supposed to defend yourself in a foreign language, and even the system is foreign, system of justice is foreign. Not your fault, but I'm trying to find out as far as the language is concerned in that. In UK, can you explain how far you have improved in trying to make that, that you know that the constitution allows that all Lamings are equal? Maybe there are some that are more equal than others. Thank you very much.
Honorable sir.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. I'd like to start by looking at Rwandan detainees, which, as you said, there were at the time that this was taken on the 18th of May, 1,701 Rwandan detainees had been incarcerated for more than 2 years. Now, I seem to recollect that we passed a law a couple of years ago making it illegal to incarcerate Rwandan detainees for more than 2 years. I assume that the law has not been put into effect yet, but there doesn't seem to be a vast improvement, particularly on the over 5 years. I mean, it really is shocking that there are 167 people who've been in prison for more than 5 years awaiting trial. And you say that you've taken some steps to improve communication and the removal of blockages. Well, I think we need to be informed what those blockages are, because it really is, unless we solve those things, going to continue to make it impossible to implement the law that Parliament passed. Historically, I just seem to remember that one of the things is that people have further charges and different types of charges at different courts. And I wonder what progress has been made to centralizing charge sheets so that, you know, a single remand detainee facing different charges at different courts was able to be consolidated into a single charge sheet that could be dealt with by one court. The rather more fundamental question is that the objective of the 7-point plan is obviously to improve the efficiency of the criminal justice system. So you improve the rates of detention, you improve the rate of conviction, presumably you improve the rates of incarceration, and that's what the figures you showed us about the increase in prison population meant. But then something's got to give, and what I missed in your presentation, and you skimmed over it rather, was the attention that ought to be given to proper reintegration, rehabilitation and reintegration. And you would know that actually our criticism of the Department of Correctional Services over a very long period has been that they have under-budgeted and under-emphasized the importance of rehabilitation and reintegration. But from the Department of Justice's point of view, there must also be a willingness to engage robustly with alternative sentences, with restorative justice, with alternative dispute resolution mechanisms that are going to make deserving cases of particularly first-time non-violent and young offenders stay out of the system. Because as somebody once famously said to me, the way you drive up reoffending is by sending somebody to prison in the first place. And actually, if you can keep somebody out of prison, then you've got a better chance of rehabilitating them than if you send them to prison. So it seems to me that there's just an element missing out of the book, or an emphasis that is missing in this presentation, that I'd really like some comment on. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much, Honourable Sir. Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. To a large extent, I've been covered by the Honourable Members who have questions before me, and here and there there might be some correlates, but I welcome what is happening in the cluster, in that the departments are driving towards some kind of uniformity, and that this process has been completed. Then the report goes on to say that, however, there must still be a buy-in by other members. My concern then is, are there some challenges in this process? What exactly is holding up the buy-in? Do they just need more time, or are they having certain concerns? And then the next question is about modernization. And the report is very positive. positive about modernization, it seems, when the cluster is winning the war. But then there is this balancing act between modernization and what happens on the ground. For instance, if we take the acceleration of inmates being released on parole or on bail, is the risk that they get back to the community, maybe rehabilitation was not sufficient for reasons some of them cited by Honorable Self just before me, and you find that there are repeat offenses by these people that have been granted parole. Are we succeeding in this balancing act? Because the community does feel it. These people are being released to further victimize them, to further commit more crimes. Then another question is about our system of releasing people who are terminally ill. The community is never too sure of the criteria that are used here, because you find that some are released and they lead a normal life outside. But I'm more concerned about the statement on page 27 of the report, where we are told that in the months of May, June this year, 3 remand detainees, even not sentenced inmates, remand detainees. 3 of them, they applied to be released on the grounds of terminal illnesses. Then we are told 1 was refused and has already died. Then we are told that another 1 died even before they received the response. So is this system efficient enough? Could there be some improvements? This is my concern. And then finally, as Honorable Breitenbach asked, that there are judges that are assisting policemen with the drafting of affidavits. The question is the standard of training good enough? Are these policemen sufficiently capacitated for the job which they must carry out? Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Hon.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I'd like to just ask a question on Section 63 of the Criminal Procedure Act and your report on that. Elsewhere in the presentation, you make mention of the fact that 15% to 20% of remand detainees, as a matter of fact, was given an option of bail. And then there's a number given of 43,000 persons being remand detainees. Well, just 10% of that is 4,300 rand. But then in terms of Section 63A, only 2,468 applications were made, so there seems to be a discrepancy there. Not all who could qualify having had the option of going back to court. So if that can be addressed, it would be welcome. Then, Chair, in terms of the overall reductions, in terms of the number of remand detainees, it's all well and fine to say that there's an overall reduction of 9%. But the fact of the matter is that there was an increase in number of remand detainees in 5 of the 9 provinces, including Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, which is 2 of the most populous provinces. So it would seem that there must be the question must be asked whether there is a problem in some of the provinces, why only in 4 of the provinces the measures put in place as a fruit, born fruit. Chair, in terms of the long outstanding cases, it has been addressed by other colleagues as well, and the Honourable Self might mention the issue of blockages. My question in addition to that is just if one looks at the problems still persisting at the forensic laboratories, and even though there is a huge reduction in the backlogs, whether in terms of anybody being a remand trainee for more than 3 years, there's still outstanding issues in respect of forensic investigations. And then, Chair, in addition to the question by the Honourable Breitenbach in respect of the training of detectives, which touched on the issue of the separation of powers, there's another aspect that I think is worrying, and that is that you might mention that the judges or the Efficiency Enhancement Committee nationally decided to also visit correctional centres. The fact of the matter is, however, that you have in South Africa a formal institution led by a judge, the Judicial Inspectorate for the for Correctional Services, performing that duty. So I would like to ask whether their visit is prearranged with the Judge Inspector, or how that is managed, because it would seem that their possible overreach if they just visit these centres on their own. And then lastly, Chair, in terms of the CAS and ICNS integrations, it mentions in the presentation that 135 courts were planned to be part of the rollout in quarter two of this financial year, and as we are in quarter two, maybe it would help the committee just to get some feedback as to whether that indeed did take place. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Hon, and thank you, Advocate Jones, for the presentation. It looks like at least the work has started, but I think out of the comments that we get from members, it just shows that more still needs to be done. And maybe to some extent, moving forward into the future, we need to actually also have a clear idea as to how you look at this also in terms of capacity. And you could actually probably manage to utilize the internal audit reports of all these departments to look at capacity issues, because sometimes you can actually continue planning and then it won't happen because you haven't actually really taken time to try and match the capacity with what you're actually trying to implement. And when it comes to ICT, IJS, case management system, also we need to look at the companies that we actually appoint to do IT work. Are they in the position to really give us what we want? Because we've been talking about these systems now for too long. But you know, you don't get a sense of things coming together. Need to be in the position to come to a stage where at some point you're saying, yes, we have a good IT system. And also, some of the IT systems existed in the past, but you don't get a sense and feeling that you make references to whether they existed, continue to exist, and if they don't exist, what happened to them? So that you don't keep on moving in circles. Because so now it feels like every time we meet, this is the intent to building a new system. The next step is supposed to be building on what we have already. I didn't quite get the ideas to whether we are collapsing the national registers for social development and justice, and if that is started, and whether we've made enough progress. And when it also comes to personal identification, I think you should actually also be in the position to manage to give an idea as to whether we link up with third countries also. Because if you have to fight crime and you're South Africa and you're a country like ours, that has got so many people from outside South Africa, from our neighboring countries, our systems should be such that they should manage to take that into consideration. so that we can be in the position to devise a strategy also around it. Going back to risk management and internal audits, for now, the general feeling is that there seems to be tension between the arms of state. How do we work on that? How do we manage to identify any warning signals of something going wrong in terms of the relationships of the arms of state about our system, that they are actually running, that actually creates the tension? You need to be in the position to talk to issues of that nature. Thank you. Can you get a response?
Thank you, Madam Chair and honourable members. I'm glad I brought a big team because there's so many questions. Some of that we can answer, some of it we might want me to return at a later stage to give you responses perhaps in writing. But I think in general we really appreciate the way in which we report our team machine. It's just work in progress. It's like a big aeroplane flying there and you have to turn it around and rebuild it basically while it is flying. So it's not an easy task. And it has taken some time and it will take some further time before we can really say we have what we really want to achieve. Just in terms of Honourable Heckenbach's statement in terms of the years, it's not a 7-year plan, it's a 7-point plan. So it's 7 focus areas that have to be dealt with. In terms of that, we started in 2008 and now 2015, so 7 years basically that we've been busy with it. And I must tell you, it sometimes feels like it's just basically started because there's so much still to be dealt with. In terms of the elements that have been indicated in terms of there's so many balls and acronyms, etc., and is anybody left to do the work, I really want to say that what we deal with is there's a secretariat that comprises of people that are seconded on an ad hoc basis to basically strategize, look at possibilities, look at the blockages, etc., and look at possible solutions. They don't even sit and work on a permanent basis. They come from the various departments as experts and look at those things and deal with it. These various boards, etc., that have been created deals with alignment of issues, etc. So IJS board, for example, where Godfrey is his chairperson, we have a whole range of people that come to the office and deal with the various elements from the department. It's a board that helps oversee the alignment, etc. So they deal with the guidance, etc., things like that, whilst actual work is dealt with at an operational level. So it's not like we have a lot of boards that are permanent, etc., and that are doing the work and nobody else. The work continues. These people are helped guide, etc., and so on. The NECs, etc., and things like that. It's a meeting of judge presidents, all role players on a monthly or quarterly basis that look at what are the challenges and what are possible solutions. And in one of those meetings, the issue of the training of detectives came to the fore, etc., and there was an offer made, but let's look at that also from the judicial side. So it's nothing sinister, it's a blockage. We're looking at using retired judges as mentors, etc., things like that, helping to augment what's already happening from SATs in terms of detective services, etc. So there's no breach of separation of powers, etc., in terms of that. It's an honest, I think, attempt across the value chain to deal with those sort of things. I agree, public confidence is a challenge. We really have to work more on that. And it is, obviously, the system improves, there will be more confidence, etc. But that is work in progress. And I think we all understand that there are challenges. When I started off, I indicated, my minister indicated in his budget that there is challenges. And that there's going to be colloquiums and he's involved on visits to the various courts and provinces at the moment to look at those elements that impact on public confidence to help us to deal with it very specifically. So obviously, those are the things that we will continue to work on. In terms of the Office of the Chief Justice, I think we've got a variety of questions that were posed there. That I can ask Martin to just deal with some of those.
Thank you, Chair.
The first question of the judges getting involved in training, I think at this point it is only here in Western Cape where both the judges and the magistrate have been invited as guest lecturers at PAL just to provide some kind of training. They are not involved in taking of affidavits or anything like that. It is just to provide some kind of guidance at this point. And as I've said, that has only been a practice that has only happened here in Western Cape so far. But just to add, why there is a need for the judges to get involved. In terms of the Superior Courts Act, as we all know that the Act, the offence, the Chief Justice as the head of the judiciary, both for the High Court and the Law Court, and it further says that and empowers him to provide some kind of guidance in matters, amongst others, that relate to the efficiency, the effectiveness, and also the functioning of the courts. So this whole exercise would have come up where people would have identified the blockages that were fed to them, and therefore the Chief Justice would then say, provide that kind of guidance to enhance the effectiveness and the functioning of the courts. There was also a question around the NOC, the mandate of the NOC. When the Chief Justice established the National Enhancement Efficiency Committee, this forum, which was later called the NOC, was established just to draft the terms of reference for the NEC. A decision was later made to say they must keep this forum, which its new mandate was basically to the subcommittee of the National Enhancement Committee that monitors the provincial committees, but also it provides some strategic issues to the NEC that needs the NEC to consider. This committee is led by one of the judges from Western Cape, but the members of this committee come from Department of Justice, the lower court, district courts are represented, the regional courts are represented, as members of the legal aid and other stakeholders that are relevant to the criminal justice system. And it meets as and when there is an engine to meet. The NEC only meets twice a year. The provincial enhancement efficiency committee, they meet three times a year. And they also discuss, as it was said earlier, matters that basically affect the performance of the courts.
Thank you. I think we'll return back later if there are more aspects. Just in terms of some of the other questions, statistics show that 108 unique, we absolutely agree with that. I think we couldn't be more agreement than that. That's why we have a specific focus on each child that are in prison. That's why we've asked legal aid, who represents most of those children, to specifically focus on them and monitor what's happening in terms of each of those things. What we have in South Africa at the moment is that in terms of the Child Justice Act, we have a system where children need to be assessed and if they don't pose a danger to themselves or to other people, etc. They can be kept in places of secure care, etc. So that's in place and most of them are kept. These 108 are the real violent, the ones that are giving lots of problems at that local level that they can't deal with, etc. I agree, they shouldn't be there. But what do we do when the court says that there is now no place where secure care will not be adequate? It's a discretion that is in the judiciary, it's not with us. But it's something that I think the committee needs to consider and look at, and when they have engagement with the judiciary, pose that question. From our side, we're trying to push that it shouldn't be those. And from a system perspective and improvement, we're trying to engage with role players to make sure that they are not there. In terms of mentally ill, again, that's a real challenge that we have. And the challenge that we have is that there's not enough psychiatric hospitals in South Africa, and there's not enough skilled people that can deal with those. We have certain provinces like Limpopo, Pumalanga and Northern Banks that don't have any mental health hospitals at all. And we've been posing that question to the Department of Health, asking them please increase your bed space, etc., so that we don't have these people kept in jail. That they are not kept there because that's not where they belong. Some of these people have been declared state prison patients, but they are still there. There's not enough space for them. And I think from our side, we're raising it as a challenge. There's an issue around that, and I think that is something for the committee to engage with. We've had engagements with health, and we continue to try and engage him on that, but there are challenges in terms of that. We've got ECS here, they can deal with some of those elements in terms of the numbers, etc., but it's a thing that we have as a standing item on our agenda to see where are they, what can we do, how do we engage further with the Department of Health in both places to make sure that they get there. The courts can make orders that, so it's not illegal to keep them there because it's a court order that says whilst they bed space is awaited, they can get their drugs. So from that thing, from that order, the challenge rises that some of them remains here for years, like you indicated in Kimberley. So, we appreciate that the committee is also worried about that, and from our side we continue to engage with the role players. But unfortunately they are not part of our trust in the Department of Health, and it makes it very difficult to deal with that if they don't build more hospitals, etc. They are starting to look at some of the provinces to build more, but one of the challenges that we have is that they don't have a central system. Like if they have certain provinces, hospitals that they can from other provinces deal with those people in those provinces on a priority basis. Now it's left to the various provinces, and each province is first going to cater for their own people before they look at other provinces. So that's a challenge that we need. So I think we noted, but from our side, it's not to deal with it. This is kind of other departments, mandate, etc. In terms of the IT and the tracking systems and the other elements, can I perhaps ask that Mr. Seba deals with all the IT aspects in conjunction with Martin Bradley, and in terms of the practical aspects that relate to the court elements and prosecuting elements relating to the IT. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Durant, honorable members. I will start with, there was a question around the electronic the first IT question that was asked was around electronic monitoring, and I think it we are now honorable member was referring to the electronic monitoring of inmates. This solution, to my understanding, I think members of the personal services was only deployed to a limited extent. I'm not quite sure if it's a continuous deployment of the personal system. I think it was done as a pilot, and it hasn't been rolled out any further. I'm not sure if it's a budget issue or something like that, but personal services will add, as I'm sure what the challenges are. Electronic case management system, is it working? How many cases have been taken through it end to end? We don't have, unfortunately, the numbers with us at the moment. We can't. Okay, that's it's a solution that we have. The first phase of it was just in offline, but a standalone solution, which was used in the prosecution.
You're talking about an electronic case management system. How can it be done online?
Okay, let me explain this. The first phase, through you, Honourable Chair. The first phase of the solution. Remember, when we are building technology solutions, we take it step by step. The first step is to build an application that you will use to interface with other departments. It was not offline, it was sent alone of an application that is used primarily in the prosecution of the security standard. As and when the readiness of the application is at an intermediate level, then we allow the transmission of documents or of information from the police into the prosecuting authority so that they can generate an electronic charge sheet. And at the moment, with the deployment we have done in two courts that are currently operational, which is in only in David, of the second phase when the integration actually happens, the number of cases that have been going through that, but we don't have a number set at this stage, but it's only been for a brief period when we were running the panel. But I think Advocate Bradley Smith might want to end this one. Another one was more of an IT security question. And the question was saying, do we have one central system, and what provisions do we have to protect the information that you need, the hackers and so on and so on. That's the most important element to explain here is that the system that we have, the central system, is more of a central infrastructure that allows the transmission of information from one department to the other. And for the purpose of integration, we only bring the information that each department has signed and agreed that this is the information that we are prepared to share for the purposes of measuring the criminal justice system and for the purposes of moving the information electronically. Each department remains with their own business application or systems that they use to run the operations. For instance, the dockets will still be sitting in the police system, and if a docket moved to MPA, what the central system will do is not to store the actual dockets, it's to move it to the MPA so that they can continue with their work, but not storing it. What we are storing in the IS transversal is the fact that we have moved a docket from one point to the other. We have more checking the event so that we can be able to link all the events and provide reference data. So the security remains, the fundamental security remains at departmental level. However, we are also have acceptable industry standards in terms of information security that is where we are in the manner in which we have built the application. And it's not treated as an individual infrastructure which is sitting on its own. It's actually co-locating in the data center where the police production systems are sitting in Belarus, in Victoria. So the same physical security that is there to protect the data of the police applies for the IGS transversal hub. So from a security point of view, we don't have any challenges. And from the next financial year, we're looking at developing a fully functional disaster recovery program to manage just the IGS transversal. Another information security, another technology related question was relating to, it was more of a comment in terms of companies that we appoint to help us to deliver the solutions. Is a comment that you will take. Person ID, and how do we integrate that with, how do we utilize that across the cyber prison and so on and so on. Well, the person ID for the purposes of the IGS, or in the context of IGS, the person ID is more of a unique key that we create for people who are offenders, or people who are arrested, or who interact with the criminal justice system on the other side. In other words, customers of the criminal justice system. The minute you walk into our service center, which is the police. At the point of arrest, we will make sure that we get as much information as possible about that Arabic person, so that when he comes back again when they get arrested the next time, we are able to look at it and pull everything from the system that is all about the person, and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. So, we are using certain biometrics to verify IDs of people that we know in home affairs, and we are also using the biometrics such as fingerprints to identify people that we don't know in home affairs. At the moment, we are relying on the National Population Register as well as the home affairs identification system to pull the data about relating to citizens of the Republic of South Africa. In the future, we are intending to also use information relating to travelers, which will be broader than just people in the Southern region. All travelers, asylum seekers who come into the country who might be involved in any element of crime. For instance, if pick up, Department of Home Affairs will store the biometric details of the travelers, asylum seekers, and so on and so on. So when we pick up fingerprints at the crime scene at some point, we'll be able to identify through Home Affairs who the fingerprint says belongs to. If we can't find the fingerprints in the National Population Register or the HANI system, then we will go through a separate database which carries the biometric data of those travelers, asylum seekers, and other people who may have been in the country to contact such a crimes. I'm not sure if there's any other technology related question. We'll figure out.
I think the next aspect I was going to turn to is correctional services. There's been a number of questions on the story of justice, rehabilitation, etc. Lucky, etc. And you have to ask that you deal with some of those elements here. Is it going to? Yes, can you start dealing with those, please? Thank you.
This one of the remand that has been longer than 3 years. According to the Act, it specifies that the remand detainee should not spend a period of 2 years without being referred to court for consideration of his length of detention. And then it does not really say when you read the whole provision, it does not say that people will not really spend more than 2 years. It's even saying that if the court decided that a person must be sent to detention, the subsequent applications should be submitted on an annual basis. We'll try to explain also to the public, because there were a lot of questions that were coming from the public, so we simplified them. We put some questions that are simple for the public and the responses. And then the other question was on 49E with regard to remand detainees. Is those remand detainees that are terminally ill and severely incapacitated that we have to refer to court? Before we can refer a person that we see is terminally ill or physically incapacitated, as it is, we don't have those powers. First, we have to refer the person to the doctor. It's the doctor that must see a person, then there's a prescribed format for the report that the doctor must provide to DCS. Once DCS receives a doctor that confirms that the person is terminally ill and the name of the diagnosis, and then whether the center is not in a position to offer the treatment that is required, is then that DCS can submit an application to court. But also before submitting that application, DCS must check in the community where the person will be released, whether there will be the support service that will be provided. All this must be in the application that is submitted to court. So, and DCS also must be clear that they are not in a position to treat this person within their hospitals that are in DCS. That is written also in the legislation. Hence, there are few applications because some people are treated in the hospital. But with cases where people died while the application was is submitted to court, it's because of the process that it takes to collect all this information. Yeah, in order to submit the application to court, must first get the report from the doctor. Must also go to the community and check where the services will be available for the right to claim this.
Thank you very much. Why don't you open up for some questions from the minister? Oh, you're still responding? Okay, let's complete the responses and then it will be for our questions from the minister.
I just wanted clarification on what you just said.
Okay, go on all the way through that.
Madam, you please just be specific. You have got a doctor each and every center. So you can't say you still have to consult a doctor. There's a doctor that comes in every day. Secondly, how long does this whole process take? How long are maybe to set the home? You have got a van that can be sent any day to check it. How long do you need? Then you must submit if there is a point and say, and certain people don't do their job well. Am I correct?
Let me explain. The 49E is new. It's not an old provision. We looked at this because for the remand detainees, we didn't have any provision that was allowing us to refer them to court when they were terminated early. So these are the cases that are coming in and out. At times when they go to court, sometimes they don't even come back. So we don't know why it does not come back. So it's really a very fluid probation. It's not like a sentence offender. So by if a person cannot go to court because the person is very sick, but when that will refer the person also to the doc. And if a person is terminally ill, but also we have to take into consideration that some of the people that we are needed to work again, they are already physically incapacitated when they are referred to us. So if we also consider referring to this, it must be the doctor that must give us a report that then we will attach in our application when we submit the application to court. At times the doctors, they prescribe a lot of tests. I know of a case that this physically incapacitated athlete has been placed on electronic tagging. But the doctors also, they ordered a lot of tests. They order a lot of therapies that had to be undertaken while the person was in detention before a report that we could submit. That we could attach to the application to court was available. Then I think I can conclude on this matter and move to the next one. The question on 63. There was a question on 63 applications that the applications that we submit for 63, the people that we have that are detained with an option of bail, they are actually that this is a big number as compared to the application that we submit to court. In terms of 63A, not everybody that is on bail qualifies. You must have been charged with serious severe crimes. And also it must be a lower court. And then some of the people that you have, they have got more than one charge. Or people, one charge with bail and other charge with no bail. So such people don't qualify at all. Some people would have multiple charges where it's only one charge that is a Schedule 7. The other charges are out of Schedule 7. And then also what we've picked up, in some places when you visit, they are not overcrowded. We visit some centers in Port that have been remand detainees. They can use 63A. We visited even the magistrate, the local magistrate said, I've visited the center that is detaining remand detainees. It's really the conditions didn't appear to be requiring the application of 63A. But in such a case, we normally say that you must use 63.1. 63.1 allows also for application for bail review, but there the initiator, it must be the prosecutor or the accused. So we normally might have the provision to the remand detainees, but if they don't want us to make the application on their behalf, there's nothing that we can do. Yeah, in terms of 63.1. And then there was a question also on the visit by the judges, and the section 99, the Commission of Services Act, it makes provision for the access of our detention facilities by the constitutional judges and the magistrate. They are allowed to visit any part of the center. They can even interview the prisoner. But that does not conflict with the role of the inspecting judge. Yeah, because the provision is clear on what they can do when they visit the center. It's also to see, like, when we complain that we are overcrowded, want the magistrate to go and see the overcrowding. That has taken place in Boston because the number of humanitarians has increased in Boston. So the magistrate and the judges, they have visited Boston as a team and they have seen the center, because as this is, you cannot refuse to admit a humanitarian just because the facility is overcrowded. Otherwise, you would be also breaching the law. But thank you.
Thank you. Can you perhaps just also deal with the video parole aspect? Are they in all the courts? I think that's a specific question. And then secondly, in terms of the processes, the training in terms of the protocols, etc.
Okay.
And then I think we'll get to that issue in the restorative justice element. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, I'll start with the training on protocols. In fact, when we're developing the protocols, the protocol might be a provision which comes from the Correctional Services Act, like 49G or 49E, or it might be a provision that comes from the Criminal Procedure Act, or a protocol may emanate from a complaint that we have received, like we made arrival of the mantenees in court that was registered by the magistrate. So then what we did, we developed the protocol. The head of the center, in fact, and staff in our center, they participate in the protocol during the developmental phase. And then when the protocol is drafted, they are consulted. When the protocol has been signed, we ensure that we conduct training in all these facilities. We make sure that all the regions are trained in these protocols, because we also develop a reporting tool which is in line with what is in the protocol. In such a way, we train them on the reporting tool, we show them this is actually in the protocol. They are not reporting on something that is not in the protocol. So all the protocols that we've developed so far, the reporting like on 49E or 49G or 43, it falls under DSS because it's the DSS that is the initiator of all those applications. So for the ones that are supposed to make a follow-up with the courts, yeah, 49D and 49G and 63. Okay. Then the video, the Department of Correctional Services has got 53 parole boards. So the audiovisual system has been installed in all, in 52 centers. It was discovered that they have got two centers, then it was installed in one center, then the 58th center, there is head office. But though they have been installed, they are not operational at this stage because the department has to upgrade its network and the bandwidth. Yeah, so it was discovered that the system could not work without the IT infrastructure upgraded. Thank you, Chair. And I will be responding on the electronic monitor one. Yes, the electronic monitoring decided to roll the electronic monitoring in the 1st of July 2016. And we do have 714 people that are under the system. Four of them are managed. They are continuing marketing and electronic monitoring in the different courts and in all the regions. But I do want to say that the department is invited to come in front of the Portfolio Committee on the 16th of September to come and present fully the details and the challenges that they have alleged for the electronic monitoring. I think if I'm allowed, I can just stop it on that in terms of the electronic monitoring. Thank you.
And then there was a question on the issue of DOD, the Victim Offender Dialogue. The department, what we have done, we have strengthened our relationship and our participation in the DEP forum that are led by the Department of Digital Development. The reason was because when we chatting the victims, we realized that not all of them had been attended to since the person has been incarcerated. And we find that when we are inviting them to make a representation in the council, we realize that nobody has ever spoken to them. So therefore, it was necessary for us to strengthen our relationship with the CTF as well as the victim empowerment forum. But what we also have done, because of the lack of human capacity on both Department of Correctional Services and Social Development, we have advertised 63 social auxiliary workers where the exit from the Department of Correctional Services, they are focusing, they are going to be focusing solely on the victims to ensure that the victims are prepared and they are being dealt with in terms of the response to justice. We also, in terms of the, particularly in the rural areas, we are enjoying a relationship and the benefit of the traditional leaders. Because when we are about to release the offenders in those areas, in those rural villages, we engage and we inform the traditional leaders who will assist us and organize the invasions. So in the rural areas, we are currently very active in dealing with the invasions. What we have seen also, as we are working with the victims, we realize that they, because of the intensity of the scars that they have, they want to go mostly on the private VODs. So currently, in all around the provinces, we are dealing with the target VODs, meaning that they don't want us to go public. So we have our psychologists, we have our social workers, and we have our chaplains towards the families who work with the direct victims and as well as indirect victims. Also, what we have done in terms of our Office of Country Corruption, to ensure that there is a level of compliance with the condition, we are on a monthly basis having inviting the families of the families and the probationers into a family day session where we are both engaging them and strengthening the importance of the support as well as the importance of the compliance of the conditions set for the parolees and probationers. And we do realize that as we are engaging with the families, there is a lot of scars by the families themselves that they are experiencing. Therefore, we realize that there is also, you know, dialogue and mediation that we need to also conduct with the families. So in terms of the victim dialogue, that's how far we have gone. And the number that increased in terms of the targets that we set for ourselves in the strategy and document of the annual equipment. Because we said per quarter we want to ensure that we achieve 1,500 and that we have achieved. Thank you.
Thank you. Lucky, just leave with your other question.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Perhaps mine would just to add to what has already been alluded to by my colleagues. More especially on the issue of alternative sentence. There was a question on the issue of alternative sentence by one of the honorable members. I can confirm that the Department of Correctional Services, among other things, operationally we are implementing a multi-pronged strategy, out of which 8 dimensions of that is implemented by the Department of Correctional Services, of course, in conjunction with all the JCPS departments. And one of those dimensions is exactly the implementation of alternative sentences. So I wouldn't really waste the committee's time to explain all of them. But the first one deals with management of your remand detainees, as it's already been alluded to by Ufuri here, in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. Second one is the management of sentence category, in terms of the alternative sentences, among others, the capital works and so on and so on. Just to mention a few. Thank you, Susan.
But in terms of, as the president suggests, in terms of EPA elements.
Thank you, Mr. Madam Chair, and honourable members. Let me just jump down to the questions which are very relevant to the NPA. The electronic transmission of dockets, or the e-dockets as sometimes referred to, is understood on several levels. The first level, which is the one that SAPS has admitted to from the scan solution, so in other words, the handwritten at the moment that's scanned and then that's made available to the NPA. Quite frankly, we said that's not suitable because you'd know that if you want to scan documents from Poland, suddenly it's a big file and then your email server can't handle it and so forth. So we said to them, no, just hold off on that. SAPS have gone ahead in the process in terms of how to get to the point where you actually have an electronic affidavit. So in other words, you type up a Word document and you can do an electronic signature. So SAPS are working towards that. Some of you who have recently taken out life insurance policies know that the person comes with their iPad and you sign on the iPad and there you've got everything electronic, which is a much smaller file. So that's where SAPS are going in their development. The NPA at this point in time is not ready yet to receive either scan solution or any other e-docket solution they have at this particular point in time. That doesn't mean SAPS will stop the development. They need to proceed and modernize in terms of what they're doing. So when we talk about the ECMS and successful cases prosecuted using the ECMS, the electronic data management system of the NPA at this point in time only gets what they call ECMS data. That's really the Q's particulars, his address, the charges that SAPS have preferred against him, age, date of arrest, that type of information. And that we can use to populate the J15, which is the first document that is used in the court case. And then we're able to electronically send that information on to the Department of Justice, and then the clerk of the court captures the case outcome every day. The case is remanded, this and this case, and then that information comes back to the NPA. So it's really the first level. Together with that, we've got what we call the electronic charge sheets. We've got about 4,000 criminal offences already on electronic charge sheets that prosecutors can then utilise, and they have what we would call in layman's terms a pro forma that they can then populate with the charges. So it's a building process. It's one of the building blocks. Ultimately, what we aim to achieve is everything should be digital in the court. When you come to the court, you won't go and pass around physical statements. Hopefully, you can just make it accessible to the presiding officer in electronic format, and the transcriptions should be automated. So as we talk, so it should be transcribed in the system. That's ultimately where we're heading to, but it is a journey. So we've got to do one building block at a time. Let me deal with the issue of the languages and allay the concerns raised by the honourable member that people are being convicted on the basis of poorly taken affidavits by members of the police service. A person is not simply convicted because it's something in a police docket written in poor translation. What happens is there's a court process, and evidence has to be led, and there's a court interpreter, a sworn in interpreter, who will go and translate the verbal evidence that's in court into the language that the accused person understands. So that is one of the safeguards. So we realize it's not possible for every police officer to know all the official languages and a whole host of foreign languages, because we do have a large number of foreigners. But the court process is the checking mechanism, and if there's a foreign witness or a foreign accused, then the court also has to make sure that there's an interpreter who's sworn in who can then interpret for that particular individual. So the criminal justice system makes sure that there isn't a case of the weakest link of the police affidavit goes through the entire process. There is a, the checks and balances are that there's a sworn interpreter in the court process. I also want to just deal quickly with the centralization of charge sheets. Trying to centralize cases against individual accused people. The Criminal Procedure Act permits the centralization of cases. However, the complications are often accused are not alone in a case. So you can't go and take somebody who's not at all involved in the case and then centralize it because then you have evidence which is not relevant to that particular accused person. So there are certain requirements that must be met for centralization, but where it is possible, such centralization takes place. In respect of the concerns that the criminal justice system has not paid enough attention to rehabilitation, restorative justice, and so forth, if we look at the large numbers of people in custody, serving large or long lengthy periods of imprisonment, then just illustrate just the elements that have shown a growth over the last number of years that deal with restorative justice. is printed, your first process often, and these are low level grants, is obviously admission of guilt, which SAS can set for an accused as long as the magistrate of that district or division has said, okay, this is the amount of admission of guilt. The NPA also said admission of guilt. Then 57A of the Criminal Procedure Act provides a process where you can sit admission of guilt even for somebody who's appeared in court. And this has shown a phenomenal growth of 63.8%. From 2008-2009, there were 38,048 of these 57As. That's grown to 62,321 last year in the NPA's annual report. That is a large growth. ADRM, which includes restorative justice and the diversion programs, has shown a growth from 2008-09 of 81,000 to 184,000, a growth of about 125%. So as DPS has grown in terms of sentenced inmates, so the system has been dealing with people who've committed lesser crimes in getting them out in such a fashion that they also don't have a previous conviction in the case of ADRM or in the case of admission of guilt unless it was for a serious offence. So we have taken restorative justice to heart, and there are many restorative justice programs in place so that we don't have a whole society where everybody has a previous conviction. Those mechanisms are indeed in place. I just wanted to add something that was raised in regard to the people who declare such patients, and particularly the Northern Cape, which has a problem with mentally ill patients in prison. There was a recent case in the Constitutional Court where the court has found certain provisions in the Criminal Procedure Act unconstitutional, and you will soon receive legislation which will permit the court, instead of sending the person to correctional services as a state patient to wait for a bed in a mental hospital, will actually have the power to actually make another determination, such as the person could be released into the care and custody of another person or a doctor or so forth. So I think they are being dealt with. Some of your concerns that you've raised are also those that the Constitutional Court has felt reflect their challenges. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think just for last wrapping up aspects, I think there was a question in terms of the long outstanding cases, obvious still early investigations, forensic, etc. If we look at those longer than 2 years, etc., and longer than especially 3, 4, 5 years, out of all of that, then the remands that are done for further investigation is about 1%. So most of those things, the trial work has already been dealt with in terms of preparation, etc. Most of the reasons for postponement for those cases are they are partly heard matters. So it's not like they haven't started, they're partly heard and it's just taking a long time. Some of it deals with postponement for judgment, about 5% of them are for judgment, 6% for sentencing, about another 2 or 3% for warrants of some of the full accused that have responded, etc. But unavailability of court stakeholders can be anyone, either prosecutor, that's ill or whatever, about 4%. The majority is, however, partly in. So I think in terms of that, we try to prioritize those affairs as good as freely as possible. In terms of the elements relating to that we didn't deal with the rehabilitation aspects so thoroughly, I think in terms of the presentation, we covered it in the presentation to some extent, but I just hope didn't focus on it. It's not like we don't have a specific focus on it. It's very much a focus on it. We take to heart the aspect that we need to look into the audit report of the various departments to look at the capacity aspects and those sort of things. We are doing that. That's part of the model of looking at how much is required in terms of capacity in the various departments, and that's why that is taking a bit of time. In terms of the national register, there's no issue in terms of that. So those things are being dealt with between justice and social development, etc. The registers and things, there's no challenges there at this point in time. Linking up to other countries, that's a challenge at this point in time, because at
this point in time, we're just trying to link up between our own departments within the cluster and dealing, making sure that is in place. To then link up with countries outside the country is going to be a next step type of thing, but that's not our immediate aspect. In terms of risk management, attention between the arms of state, at this point in time, I think those things are receiving attention at other levels. I've indicated that my minister, Minister of Justice, Constitutional Development and Correctional Services, is planning to hold a colloquium. Part of that will be dealing with separation of functions issues, etc. And that will be in March next year. So those things are being dealt with in terms of those various areas. But actually, I think what we wanted to indicate is that there is, I think, a lot of work that is being done. But this is not something that we will just see overnight, a final solution. If we look at the systems, etc., the development in terms of each department, what has to happen in correctional services, police, etc., justice, NPA, etc., it's huge building block that needs to be put in place there. And that's been taking some time. But we've also had challenges with instances such as CETA, etc., and things like that. And those are the sort of things that hampers in terms of speed, etc., how we deal with these things. But I think what the presentation has tried to show you is that we are really committed to making sure that we have a more efficient system and that we are working very well in dealing with it. I don't know if there's any further questions from the members.
I'll open for further questions of clarity. Honourable Brigma and Honourable Mula.
From the answers that I received from Mr. Seven versus Silver, I take it that there are no cases that have run through the electronic case management system from start to finish successfully after all this time, which is somewhat disappointing. You showed us a slide that we don't have, Mr. Jones, with regards to the forensic laboratory backlogs. And if I could just look at that, please. Have been drafted to pave the way for creation of a unique person identifier and integrated booking. English is my mother tongue. What does that say? Page 57. You refer to the community policing forums and how they have been engaged in efforts to understand and resolve challenges, etc., etc. A little while ago, I heard on the news that the Gauteng Commissioner has abandoned the CPS in Gauteng. Do you have any idea what's happening there? I would assume that Gauteng is one of the provinces that need them most. So, are we making any progress there? Thank you.
Let's get a comment, and let's get the comment first from the members, and then you can then be given an opportunity to respond. Under the phone book.
I think the comment would be around the issue that you always think about. Because I think at the end, the society that we want to see, the society that embraces almost all the languages, to the extent to which we are prepared to take this thing on the other, to the other level in terms of the language, because the proceedings as we currently see them in the Western Cape and Gauteng and in a high court and everywhere, I think they are still in Africa. Now, as we deal with this matter of integration, we need to advance to a level where we also do these proceedings in our own African indigenous languages, because that would mean a representation to the majority of the people. Now, some investigation, have we done some investigation in terms of ensuring that maybe when it comes to the Vision 2063, education is being done, those who are in Limpopo are able to litigate in separate events and so on, or those who are in Mpumalanga and litigate in the Swati in the area, because that's where we must generally go. But what we're seeing now is that 21 years into this democracy, Africans are still dominant in this space. So I think we'll run some comments and some roadmap towards achieving this litigation in terms of our own indigenous languages. Thank you very much, sir.
Honorable Mutato.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for your responses. On the issue of the interdepartmental integration, Professor Degra, it appears to me that in terms of fingerprint identification, this will be applicable only for those, let's say, people who will be legal in this country, legally, correct? Because in terms of assessing this from home affairs, as per presentation. And then another thing is the issue related to restorative justice, whereby you make mention that you interacted, especially in rural areas, with traditional leaders. Maybe you meet him, unless you don't have, then you can reach a response in terms of statistics in this provincial way. Because this is really very, very important, especially in rural areas, where we know that entry point is traditional council. So I would like, I would appreciate if you elaborate more on this. And then in terms of this World Charter 7.10, which ones are quick wins, according to this generic question, which ones will be quick wins in terms of your observation? Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. There's a lot of work that still needs to be done to consolidate this. One thing that one question that I wanted to actually also ask is, in terms of a child detainees, you haven't really mentioned anything about participation of probation officers. Somewhere I had auxiliary workers, and I'm not sure whether you are using probation officers and to what extent in order for us to actually avoid the situation where we find children in custody. Mob controls. I don't think your strategy also is reference to mob controls. Mob controls that will generate the result you call sometimes more justice. When it comes to issues of arrest and the prosecution, how do you handle that? You need to develop some kind of a strategy, because this is what actually brings about anarchy. So people know when they do it in a mob, in a form of a mob, then there's no way of retribution. So if you could look at that and strategize also around that. Parliament document on the criminal justice system within the research unit of Parliament has actually identified as key reasons for lack of progress in modernization and integration as delays in tender processes, but CETA, inadequate procurement processes between departmental role players, and CETA, shortage of subject matter experts, and inadequate service level agreement with CETA in terms of skills and technical resources. As a result of inadequate subject matter input into preparatory bid documents. So, what I would actually like to ask here around these outcomes, what role is CETA playing in all of this? Because you haven't really mentioned your interaction with CETA. Earlier I actually asked about the quality of service providers that you actually bring on board. So keep on talking about modernization, but it doesn't really happen. But what role is CETA playing? What you need to actually identify. You haven't said much about issues of protection of women. At least you've mentioned children, though not extensively, because we need to be sure that we comply with all the provisions of protection of children, our own protocols that we signed into the International Human Rights Treaty, the protocols including our own legislation as it talks to child protection, but also in terms of protection of women. You have like TPL access, care centers, you haven't made reference to them. You haven't actually indicated how you actually handle cases of women who are traumatized. And maybe your issues of the database, do you have women, people who can handle the human? Have you taken that in consideration? If not, maybe move on into the future. This is what you need to do. Entry point, how do you deal with cases of this nature? So that you don't actually come up with a system that perpetuates the trauma that women have actually experienced. Okay, thank you. You can get the response.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. If I can sort of just do the first aspect relating to the National Department of Health, Mr. Schools, can you just deal with that quickly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question was, what is it that we see when we look at the 43,000 odd outstanding cases, and how does it translate in terms of processing? There are 39,433 e-mortem alcohol samples outstanding, and that's for drunken driving, and 3,964 post-mortem samples. If I look at the processing time presently, 7,000 samples a month is being processed up dramatically from the last 2-3 years, and there's an inflow of 5,900 on average. It's been very consistent over the last 2 years. The processing time then is 5.5 months for the samples, and it is coming down, and it is believed that it will be around 4 months if the present rate actually continues. There's also special arrangements that have been made with SAT, whereby any sample can be requested to be prioritized. And it is used reasonably well. Thank you.
If I can purchase legal aid, whether I'll be tested with SAT and other elements of legal aid that I'm working at, it was useful.
Thank you, Chair. There's a few issues that I can comment on earlier responses before I deal with the issue of the electronic legal aid application system. And that is the our work that we're doing together with the Department of Correctional Services on remand detainees. Just to again inform the committee that the majority of the cases that we track are in the trial and court stages. There's only 1%, as Duran mentioned, that is in the further investigation stage. What we need to also indicate is that we also check the legal representations of all those in the remand detainee categories paid in 2 years. And as expected, the majority are with legal aid. 32% are directly done by our practitioners, whereas 33% is with our judicial practitioners, and we're stuck with private practitioners. What we find is that the majority of these cases, we have to study the reasons for the delays in the cases, and you'd find that in the majority of the cases, these are cases where there are multiple courts used, and that leads to problems in terms of the trials proceeding where, for various reasons, people, whether they're accused or legal representatives, are not always available in time. And we do actually check the reasons for after each court appearance, the reasons why this case is postponed. And with regard to the electronic legal application system, I would like to inform the committee that at user testing stage, we picked up that the testing was continued to fail, to the extent that legal aid has now informed the consultants who are dealing with it that we're no longer prepared to continue with it, and we have now terminated the contract. We have informed the ICJS about that recently. It was unfortunate that the translation of the system's applications to the actual coding which we could test was not successful. And therefore, legal aid at the moment is considering its options in terms of how we take this process forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. And let me explain the architecture design was actually first. The architecture design that we are referring to, that we say that has been done, is an architecture that informs how the systems within the police should be talking to each other so that they can talk to the rest of the value chain. For instance, if you look at the police have a number of systems, and many of those systems today remains isolated. And many of those systems, one way or the other, deals with persons. So for us to be able to say we need a proper person tracking solution throughout the system, we need to make sure that we link a fingerprint system, which is called an automated and APS system, we link to the case, which is CAS, because that deals with cases or it administers cases. You also have things like your criminal history applications, which also sit in there, and there's quite a few other systems, including those that test whether the person is wanted and so on and so on. So we needed a proper framework which included a lot of analysis in the background to provide that architecture system. For this thing to work, these systems are communicating in the following manner. Once that has been done, and the creation of a unique identifier, which will be an equivalent of a criminal ID, as it were. So once that person carries that ID, which we call a unique person identifier, everything known about that person will be linked to that key, and that key will stay with them. When they come back again, when we test them, whether the person has been arrested or has been stopped in a roadblock or something like that, the minute they interact with the biometrics that pulls the information, everything known about them will come within minutes. So this will empower the prosecution to oppose bail, because at the moment it's very difficult for to provide within 48 hours of the person's arrest everything known about the individual, even if the person is a regular customer of the criminal system. For instance, people go and get arrested in a different jurisdiction and get bail, and they go and do something else in a different jurisdiction, and they also somehow happen to get bail, because at the time, within the 48 hours of between they are arrested in the first appearance, very little is known about a person because of the reliance of the single biometric, which is the fingerprints, which continues to rely on fingerprints experts. So that process takes longer than the time that the window that we have of 48 hours. So that's the gap we're trying to reach. So once that architecture framework has been finalized, then all applications or systems will be built based on that. And all the systems will be able to speak to each other. When they do, everything will be linked so that we are here, which will then keep us to other departments as well. And there is movement of the case throughout the criminal justice system, all the way to the correctional services of that person has been sentenced for incarceration.
Thank you. Just in terms of the
can I just complete that even with the role of CETA, leading that with the service providers that we appointed. The role of CETA is fundamentally legislated, and unfortunately, we all have, as government departments, have to utilize CETA for certain mandatory services, and some of the services are non-mandatory, where we have a choice not to use them, and we always take the option not to use them, where we don't have to use them. But there are certain legislated mandatory services, such as procurement. If you have to buy certain things, you have to buy them through CETA. And the appointment of service providers also, you have to purchase them through the CETA.
Can I just clarify the question? The person wanted to know at what point does CETA come in terms of the presentation? And whether these challenges that were articulated have been or will be overcome? When I mentioned the challenges that a government department, for example, normally get from CETA, how are you going to manage to deal with those challenges?
Thank you for the question. Some of the challenges, we find creative ways of working around them. For instance, we know that the procurement process takes long. And it's driven because these procurement processes were designed to keep corruption and bid rigging and all those kind of things. So by nature, they are a lengthy process. So one of the creative ways that we have resolved as the IJS board was to say we need to align common things that we are going to purchase as different departments. The way the main issue are running the program is department, we draw up a plan and everyone knows what they have to do, and they have to do their individual procurement processes, which each one of them have to touch in one way or the other. And the challenges that come with CETA will always be there. So what we have decided to do is that we merge our procurement plans, we identify common things that we have to purchase in at any given time, align the timing, and make sure that when we go through a tender process, we go through it once, even if it means that we appoint more than one service provider to serve different departments. But at least the time it takes, if it takes 6 weeks to just go through the process until the tender is out, we go through the process about 6-7 times because of the number of departments involved. So what we want to do now is to say, let's identify specific things we're all going to buy, make sure that all departments are involved in one procurement process, we go through it once, and we get the services that we require. So those are the kind of things that we are trying to do around the issues. But some of the issues are fundamentally there. For instance, in the Department of Justice, we are currently sitting with
from a networking point of view. Some of the sites are sitting on sister network, and some of the sites, and by sites I mean the courts, are sitting on Telkom, and there's currently no movement in terms of either taking them back to Telkom or finding a proper solution where everything will be at once and we can expect the same level of performance from an IT perspective.
It's okay, you can hold it there. Because you're making reference to IKS port, but the report that I'm making reference to also identified inadequacies of IKS ports, which is an area that needs to be looked at. Because you know, what is important is to really seriously build capacity around all this that we are intending to do. Otherwise, we'll keep on talking about it the same way next year this time, during this month of August.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we know that the report that you are mentioning, we've not received a copy of it yet until today. I think we've seen it for the first time today. We have made arrangements that we get electronic copies so that we can look at it, study it, and make sure that that becomes part of the way forward. So we take that to heart. There's no issue about that. Thank you. In terms of some of the other elements, community policing forums, I think there are challenges in terms of that, and I think we've agreed that. That's why we helped the civilian secretariat to draft the white papers on policing as well as on safety and security, because there are serious challenges in terms of, for example, the community safety. There's no regulatory frame. There's no act that deals with it. It's up to the municipalities whether they want to buy in it and deal with it or not. That type of thing. So we need to watch that. Community policing forums, there's issues relating to budgeting and all kinds of other type of elements. The one how things and what's happening there, I don't have a clear understanding in terms of that. We are engaging with the civilian secretariat and with the police commission in terms of that. And I think we will provide more information once we get that. But at this point in time, community policing forums are a challenge. In terms of the language issue that was raised, I think we all agree that we need to make sure that we deal with the obligations containing the constitution. We are looking at capacity in terms of languages, etc. Part of it is, and I think we dealt with it when we dealt with our departmental budgeting aspects at the portfolio committee, that we're looking at having certain fields that deals with indigenous languages, informed people in those fields deal with that. And I think those are some of the things that we are busy with, but there are challenges in terms of some of those elements, because it deals with the skills and the views and the languages that have been translated in terms of things, etc. So that we are positive progress in terms of that we are looking at those models. So it's not like there's nothing happening. We want to move away from those rules that are just of part to the English, etc. To look at indigenous languages very specifically. So we are absolutely in the same mind there. In terms of the 7-point plan, which are quick wins, I think those are the things where we look at that. How do we interact between the various departments, looking at case law management, I mean, in conjunction with the judiciary, the prosecuting authority, etc. Looking at how do we schedule cases in such a way that all the disputes are identified before, that the case are trial ready, and that they then can deal with those cases in a proper way. That's starting to happen in some areas. There's lots of other work that still needs to be dealt with that. Other quick wins deals with aspects, the protocols that we've instituted to make sure that at least the people between the various departments understand what they need to do. They need to understand what the roles are, what the roles of the other departments are, and that there's agreement in terms of those things, that it's not unnecessary blockages, etc. So those things that we're putting in place are helping to deal with some of those issues, etc. In terms of the elements relating to mob justice and the arrest and prosecuting strategies, within the cluster we are looking at a certain authority on the state to make sure that we deal with things in such a way that there's no necessity for anybody to turn the law to their own. Obviously, I think when those things do arise, there are priority matters that need to be dealt with speedily, arrest, prosecution, etc. Try and finalize those cases as quickly as possible and send out the message that it's not necessary to deal with mob justice, and if they are dealt with in that way, that there are consequences for it. But a lot of it has also to do with communication and awareness raising and what does the criminal justice system deal with, and what does prison system such as such as things like that? Because I mean, often hear the allegations that the community is upset because a person's arrested and the next day back in the streets on bail, etc. I don't understand that that people are presumed to be not guilty until the court has found them guilty, and that they have a right to be released if there is no fear of them responding or making sure that they don't tamper with witnesses and things like that. So those are the bone conditions and things that need to be explained much more thoroughly with by the judiciary and by the other role players. And that's why community structures such as policing boards, etc., are so important so that they can help deal with those things. And that's why it's also contained in the white paper to make sure that there are that type of communication. In terms of protection of women, we've not dealt with it directly, but we might ensure that in terms of the criminal justice system, we have certain priorities. And the first priority is obviously that we try and deal with cases as speedily as possible. But in terms of that, we prioritize cases of women and children before they deal with anything else. When you deal with things such as the forensic laboratories, there's prioritization in terms of all those women or female victims, etc., and where the women things are involved. So the prioritization of those things happen as part of the JCPS goals, etc. We don't have very specific processes in terms of the 7 points and relating to women's say, but I think we take to heart what you've indicated, and that is something that we will look at when we deal with our matters. Obviously, we have those schemes that you have mentioned, the Tutela care centers. We've got all of those elements that are built into the system to make sure that we sort of bring further traumatization, secondary traumatization, etc. Much of that work we dealt with by the super units of the NPA, but also by the honorable groups of justice and other departments that have similar structures to help deal with improving how women are dealt with within the criminal justice system. In terms of probation officers and children in custody, perhaps DCS can assist with that.
Well, with regard to the
In terms of children that are in custody, what we've done is the Department of Correctional Services, we've developed a developmental framework on the introduction of child justice aid. What we've discovered, the child justice aid and the national policy, a framework on child justice aid, they have sort of been integrated, especially the national policy framework. All the responsibilities of DCS with regard to children, they are emanating from Correctional Services Act. Then they were put in the national policy framework. So as such, some of those responsibilities are not in the Child Justice Act. The Child Justice Act is dealing with the court processes. But then we summarize all that into a framework which is 20 pages. So that everybody in the sense can be trained. We've started to train officials on that. But the critical challenge now that we have, that we've reduced as the numbers of children, is that some centers are keeping only one child. Okay. So we have negotiated with the judiciary, but as a head of center, it's difficult to detain only one child. So because you cannot meet the remand detainees with the sentenced children. And so which means you have to detain this child till the next court date. Fortunately, the court intervals are 14 days. We are monitoring that also. Then if the next court date is 14 days, we will refer the child back to court for the warrant to be corrected. So it has been agreed upon at the NOC that we can submit applications to the courts that have referred the child to us to consider placing the child in the secure care facilities. I don't know whether all the magistrates will accept it because there are clear conditions in Section 31 of the Child Justice Act. The conditions that the presiding officer must take into consideration before placing a child in prison. So we really don't know, but we would also put this in place. If it works for us, it will really help with the management of children. Thank you.
Thank you. There was a question by an honourable member, I think, Reifenbach, relating to a slide that deals with the 121 cases that were withdrawn as part of the 2468 applications that were submitted. I don't know why those cases were withdrawn. The fact of the matter is we were monitoring what happened to those matters that because they were more detaining, we got the feedback that out of those numbers, X number were reduced bail, X number were placed on warning, and X number were cases withdrawn. I can only presume that there wasn't sufficient evidence of that for the to continue with it, and instead of making a long, prolonged trail application, the prosecutors were told to do it more efficiently at the late. But we can try and investigate that. Chair, in terms of the traditional leaders, which provinces perhaps correction services can just assist there? Which provinces first open?
Okay, thank you, Chair. One of the members, we are enjoying the support of the officials from the areas of Polokwane, the areas of Triangle, and we are also making inroads in the KZN. They do not have specific in terms of numbers and specific issues, but I can make that information available to you.
Thank you. We will submit that to the Assembly in terms of the GS side, in terms of the numbers. Then the last statement just is from the IT side.
Thank you. The last question that I didn't quite respond to was the one that says, this is that Department of Home Affairs will be taking biometric data of the, are we referring to people who are in the country legally or illegally? It's a mix of both. We are talking about people who are traveling to the country through the formal borders, in other words, through immigration, because that's the only point where we interact with people coming into the country, so we will document there by later date. But people who jump through fences and who are crossing through crocodiles through the river, it's difficult, we can't. But those people that came in legally in the country, whether it's asylum seekers and so on and so on, some of them who travel in the country end up being illegal because then they are sitting and not going back home. So we also looking at taking biometric details of the deportees as well, just to put in so that if somebody has done something, some crime in the country and then was later deported, so that we can link the crime to the individual the crime in the village.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps we can just give an opportunity to my colleagues just to make sure that we've covered all the questions. Anything from SAS, for instance, I believe, API Legal Aid, from the Office of the Chief Justice. Thank you. Correctional Services, anything first? Madam Chair, I think that concludes from our side responses. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honourable Kumlan, just one last thing.
Yes. I'm not sure if the Honourable is aware of the reason behind the question in the language. It's a question of transformation. You say, by looking into it, I don't understand. Are you saying that you are going to have the court, the procedure done in the African language? If so, where? Or are you saying that forget about that, to keep the status quo? That's the thing. I just want to get that clarified on that point, because I want you to understand. If you were to be classed in the court in John Burke, and the person is going to say, doesn't even understand the language. And you have inside, you don't know what's going on. And in everywhere, even the procedure for it. I just want you to put yourself into the shoes of somebody who doesn't understand English all, and is inside in a foreign way of doing things. This is why we need transformation. So that people, when you talk about justice, you really mean justice to all. But that's why we find out what is the program towards that.
Thank you,
Honourable Pumana. I don't know whether the team is ready to respond. I've heard of an incident in Mankwe. I think the Mankwe Magistrate Court has got a black magistrate, an African magistrate, African police, African prosecutor, but they talk in English. You can interpret. But all of them are people can talk the speech. They go to court to be in English. They need have an interpreter. Interpreting the speech. You understand what the situation is. So I guess this is where the question comes from.
Madam Chair, thank you very much, and honourable member, we've got a complete understanding and we see it in exactly the same light as part of the transformation elements of the Department of Justice side. We've got a plan in place to help look at creating those sort of indigenous courts, if you want to call that, where you deal with those indigenous languages, where everybody speaks the same language, that you don't need to translate it. But there are challenges that all that you have to take in terms of even matters that go on appeal, etc., or review to the High Court, etc. Then you need to translate those documents, etc. And we're working on that. That's a process. It's not like we are saying it's not going to happen. We've already had that as a pilot phase. We've tested it there, and we will continue to deal with that. But that's something that's happening in the department. It's not necessarily part of a 7-point plan process. It's something that's part of the language policy of the department that's being developed, but we are absolutely on the same mind in terms of the transformation elements. We absolutely are in agreement with that. It's just the process of unfolding. And that, I think, is something that we will give more feedback in later.
Yes, okay. So you chair, I would say I would be happy if you can tell me what is it.
What's 21 years old?
And just tell me,
because look, there are all that I have provision are done in Africa. What is the consequence of court of it?
You make your point, honorable.
Yeah, what I'm trying to say is, raise the problem and say, by Sarah Dan, this is what
it is. Time frame is important too. Honorable Bongo?
Hello, thanks, Chair. I think the what club is chasing the main is the matter that you have raised, even when we're doing budget work, and we want to take it further and even quicker. Because we had requested the department that we want a situation where when a person is trained for an LLB, so the department must be a champion on that. When people are trained to get the LLB degree, at least some elective courses, first compulsory courses, person was able to do an indigenous African language so that we could bridge the gap. I think that would be an important step towards taking this new class. But like the chair is saying, the issue of time frames and so on, those here to get to tutorials and so on and so forth. I think Honorable Kumbal is also very passionate about the issue of police and the statements. So do a statement in English. When I go to litigate, they when you say, is this your statement? And somebody says, yes, it's reciting paragraph 1. And the police himself does not understand the message. The person who's saying, who's making the statement does not also understand properly what they are putting in. So these paralegals and those who are doing legal stuff, they must be trained in indigenous languages so that it will take long, I appreciate, but we need to show willingness and serious steps going towards making sure this education and the entire criminal justice system has to be indigenized. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bongo. I guess you got all our responses. Of course, the process hasn't ended. We are hoping that we will get, along the way, a consolidated report that will be addressing all of the concerns that have been raised today. Because for now, I guess you've actually given a base document which needs to be refined so that moving forward we can come up with a document that says, yes, this seems like something that will give a guideline to this process for what you implement. May I take the opportunity of thanking all of you for having been present today to present to us. Goodbye.
Chair, just on our side, also appreciation to the committee for listening to us and for the progress that we've presented. And I again extend the invitation. I think it will be important for the committee to actually see first hand a demonstration of the IT system. We can set that up very easily in Pretoria or at some of the courts that we dealt with so that they can see how the interactions are working and what's coming from the system. So whenever the that he deals with the gas fund, and want to see that as well with the gas fund, then et cetera, absolutely welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ha, ha, ha.